From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On Saturday night, in the shadow of the Paris terror attacks, the three remaining 2016 Democratic contenders took the stage in Iowa, each to make the case for their candidacy for the presidency of the United States. A debate that was originally intended to focus on the economy instead started with a moment of silence for victims in France and questions about America's role in the fight with ISIS. And then, much more. This hour on Point, the Democratic debate after Paris. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Were you tuned in? Who sounded most compelling, persuasive, up against the challenges now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Before the debate even began, moderator John Dickerson of CBS, who was hosting this debate, said that the debate itself was a symbol of what terrorists in France were trying, he said, to destroy.
The debate you've tuned in to see tonight is a symbol of the freedom we all cherish. Last night, the world watched in horror as freedom was savagely attacked in the heart of Paris. At least 129 people were killed and many more wounded in a coordinated series of terror attacks. Tonight, as France mourns, so does America.
All three spoke to those attacks and this moment. Here's Hillary Clinton.
We will support those who take the fight to ISIS. That is why we have troops in Iraq that are helping to train and build back up the Iraqi military, why we have special operators in Syria working with the Kurds and Arabs, so that we can be supportive. But this cannot be an American fight, although American leadership is essential.
Cannot be an American fight. That got the attention of former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. He pushed back on that front.
This actually is America's fight. It cannot solely be America's fight. America is best when we work in collaboration with our allies. America is best when we are actually standing up to evil in this world. And ISIS, make no mistake about it, is an evil in this world.
And Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, when it came to the ISIS attacks, he expressed shock and disgust at what had happened in Paris. And then, as he does, turned very quickly, right away from all that and back to the U.S. economy.
Let me concur with all Americans who are shocked and disgusted by what we saw in Paris yesterday. Together, leading the world, this country will rid our planet of this barbarous organization called ISIS. I'm running for president because as I go around this nation, I talk to a lot of people. And what I hear is people's concern that the economy we have is a rigged economy.
Shock and disgust, but not much time for Paris and ISIS there from Senator Bernie Sanders. Joining me now from Washington is Molly Ball, national political correspondent for The Atlantic. Molly, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Great to be back. Thanks, Tom.
With us from Des Moines, Iowa, is Sam Frizzell, covers politics and breaking news for Time. Sam, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
And from Des Moines, Rachel Caulfield joins us, Associate Professor of Political Science, Associate Director of the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizens Engagement, named, of course, for former five-term Iowa U.S. Senator Tom Harkin at Drake University, where the debate was held on Saturday. Rachel Caulfield, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be with you.
Molly, what did you see coming out of this here? It was Saturday night in Iowa, football games all over the place, terror overshadowing everything, and a kind of a weird time to schedule a debate in any case. What emerged?
Well, there has been a controversy about the timing and the frequency of these debates. The Democratic National Committee scheduled very few debates for the primary, six in total, and several of them at these weird times, like on a Saturday night when people generally have other things to do. And there's been an accusation that the DNC is basically trying to protect Hillary Clinton's path to the nomination by leaving her exposed as little as possible. Given how Hillary has performed in the debates, she's generally been seen as doing pretty well. It's questionable whether that's actually what she would want. But that's sort of the backstory. And then, of course, you had the terror attacks, and the decision was made to go forward with the debate, but to change the emphasis to these issues of foreign policy. And it was very interesting, as you noted, to see how quickly Bernie Sanders pivoted away from the issue of the day and back to his core theme. It was also interesting how much Hillary Clinton was sort of made to squirm on these questions about foreign policy. I thought John Dickerson asked a lot of very excellent pointed questions, and she did not have good answers for questions about, for example, what happened in Libya, questions about whether this administration has taken its eye off the ball and allowed ISIS to spread. And I think, you know, Hillary Clinton is someone who preps very carefully for debates. So the fact that she didn't have answers for those questions suggests that those are going to be continuing weaknesses for her.
Sam Frizzell, who did you see doing how on the Paris front, the aftermath, ISIS, the challenge there? Of course, Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, was very involved, not only in the Senate, as Bernie Sanders was quick to point out, in the vote to go earlier to war with Iraq, but in Obama administration policy on Syria and beyond.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we saw during the debate was a sort of reticence on the part of the candidates to spell out specific foreign policy pronouncements about what they want to do going forward. And part of that has to do with, of course, not wanting to overstep President Obama. But I think the main disagreement between the candidates boiled down to their past, and that I think we saw pretty clearly in Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley criticizing Clinton's stance on intervention in Libya, as well as her vote on the Iraq war. And the main sort of semantic difference between the candidates about America's role boiled down to this question of whether the United States should be a leader abroad. And so I think you played this clip earlier, Tom, of Hillary Clinton saying this cannot be America's fight, and Martin O'Malley just sort of running in there and saying this should be America's fight, but in fact there's not huge substantive differences between the candidates about what they would do going forward in Syria and Iraq.
Rachel Caulfield, I want to dig on in on that front and others, but big picture, here was Iowa's chance to host a Democratic debate. How did you see the candidates coming out of this meeting? Only their second.
Well, I'm not sure that we're going to see significant movement from this debate. I do think that, you know, when you put the Democrats on a stage in Iowa or anywhere else at this point, the Democrats look far more unified. And while there may be semantic differences, whether it's about America's role in the world or whether it's about, you know, free education versus debt-free education, you know, whatever those differences are, the Democrats as a whole look fairly unified in their approach, and they look pretty substantive when you compare them to the Republicans. And so while there may have been a few more barbed attacks on Secretary Clinton in this debate than there have been in the previous debate, I think, you know, you have a situation where, for the most part, these candidates agree with each other on most of the substantive issues.
Let's listen to Bernie Sanders responding to the moderator here on the Iraq war vote and who stood where.
Secretary Clinton, who was then Senator Clinton, voted for the Iraq war. And are you making a direct link between her vote for that war and what's happening now for ISIS, just so everybody can be clear at home?
I don't think any sensible person would disagree that the invasion of Iraq led to the massive level of instability we are seeing right now. I think that was one of the worst foreign policy blunders in the modern history of the United States.
Molly Ball, where do you think Democrats, and for that matter, general voters, are going to be listening from as they look at all this? Do they want to go back to the vote on the Iraq war, or is it what to do about ISIS right now that's got people's attention?
I actually thought that was a very strong answer by Bernie Sanders, linking the chaos in the Middle East now to the invasion of Iraq. That's actually a link that Hillary Clinton had done as well, had made as well. But I thought the point of that for Bernie was to say, look, that vote that you cast on the Iraq war, that wasn't just a mistake that you say oops and move on from. This is something that has had continuing fallout. This is a sort of national scar that we have still failed to heal. Indeed, a scar on the international landscape that this administration has not managed to clean up this mess, and that therefore, as Hillary does, to sort of say, well, I've apologized for it, let's move on, there are other new decisions to make, that begins to look insufficient if you agree with Bernie Sanders' analysis that that's at the heart of the problems that we're having today.
Molly, is Bernie Sanders fully in this race still? Is he close enough that his arguments can still, you know, be out there and heard in a way that can challenge what looks in the polls like a Clinton lead again and perhaps widening now?
I think the answer to that is yes and no. Number on the one hand, Hillary Clinton is still in a very commanding position in this primary, and I don't think anything was done to dislodge her. Indeed, I think impression of her as a candidate who is serious and engaged with the details of foreign policy that we saw on Saturday night helps her in the primary as well as probably the general election. On the other hand, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going away. I think the criticisms he is making are important and are going to test her and are not going to be ignored. I think whether it's just we in the news media wanting a competition and therefore sort of amping up these disagreements, or whether it's the sort of important democratic process of hashing out the specifics and the details, I do think Hillary's going to continue to be called to answer for a lot of the things that he's raising.
I'll call it important democratic process here. Hearing
Good.
The
Never
debate.
Blame the media.
Well, I mean, of course, the media likes a fight, but Bernie Sanders has been a very, very interesting challenger here and has brought an angle that Clinton certainly, in their time, have not really put ever front and center. And now, perhaps more so, Sam Frizzell, what about these two in Iowa? Did you see the needle move? Did you see Bernie Sanders still fully in the game?
I think what we saw on Saturday was a much more critical Bernie Sanders than we saw in the first debate. His advisors have been saying, you know, the point of the first debate is to make sure that the American public knows who Bernie Sanders is. The point of the second debate is to really spell out the differences between our candidate and Hillary Clinton. So I think that he had been preparing for that. And I think for me, the most pointed moment in the debate was Bernie Sanders' criticism of Hillary Clinton on Wall Street. There was this moment where he said, we can't be naive about this. She takes money from oil, from the military-industrial complex, Wall Street. Why are they giving her money? We know why, because she's in their pocket, was essentially the attack. And she didn't have a great response for that. So I think that resonated. But to go back to your question, did it move the needle? I mean, she's still far ahead in polls and has a big advantage in superdelegates.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Democrats debating in the shadow of the Paris attacks. Clinton, Sanders, O'Malley taking on the horror and terrorism, the U.S. economy, Wall Street on Saturday night in Iowa. Molly Ball is with us from The Atlantic, Sam Frizzell from Time, Rachel Caulfield from Drake University, and you can join us this hour. How did you score the debate? Did you see a leader there prepared to take on the post-Paris world? Did the former Secretary of State look up to it? Did Bernie Sanders? Did Martin O'Malley? Did you agree with Hillary Clinton that though American leadership is essential, the fight against ISIS cannot be an American fight, as she said? And what about Bernie Sanders, O'Malley, with his scoring points on Hillary Clinton's connections to Wall Street, contributions from Wall Street? Bernie Sanders talking about intervention. I mean, we heard him earlier shift from Paris to the rigged American economy, as he always puts it, very quickly. But he was asked and did talk about intervention. He put it in terms of regime change.
If you look at history, you will find that regime change, whether it was in the early 50s in Iran, whether it was toppling Salvador Allende in Chile, whether it is overthrowing the government of Guatemala way back when, these invasions, these toppling of governments, regime changes have unintended consequences. I would say that on this issue, I'm a little bit more conservative than the secretary.
All right.
And that I am not a great fan of regime change.
Rachel Caulfield, what about the way Bernie Sanders put that? What about how quickly he moved away from talking about Paris to going back to the economy? I mean, at a moment like this, when emotions are high, when people see the shocking death toll and the manner of death in Paris, can Bernie Sanders turn so quickly to the economy and keep Democratic potential supporters on board?
I think Bernie Sanders is in a position where he's clearly got a strong message, and he did a much better job on Saturday night articulating what his issues are and how he's ideologically positioned within the party. So that's his comfort zone. Foreign policy is not his comfort zone, and I think that's fairly clear. I think he missed an opportunity in the opening statement by moving past the Paris attacks as quickly as he did. And I think linking the Iraq war vote by Hillary Clinton to his positions on foreign policy, while it may make sense, it's a critique that we've heard before. And we heard it in 2007, certainly. She's addressed this issue, so it's fairly easy for her to deflect that attack. She has some experience doing that. I do think that, you know, on the regime change question, he's able to kind of connect directly to issues, more recent issues of foreign policy during the Obama presidency, where I think you're seeing some significant kind of public angst about where we are in foreign policy, what choices are going to need to be made coming up. And then when you had Martin O'Malley pile on by saying, you know, look, Syria is a mess, Libya is a mess, Iraq is a mess, Afghanistan is a mess. When you put all that together and you say, you know, this is the person who's been the Secretary of State, I think that's actually a pretty significant two-pronged attack on Hillary Clinton, particularly given the current environment.
I want to ask you, Sam and Molly, on that front, because, yes, she was right in there in the middle of all this, and her own fellow Democrat there, Martin O'Malley, saying mess, mess, mess. And then there's this issue of how Hillary Clinton's willing or unwilling to characterize things. Marco Rubio on the GOP side has been saying that the U.S. is at war with radical Islam, and CBS's John Dickerson put that to Hillary Clinton at the debate in Iowa.
We are not at war with Islam or Muslims. We are at war with violent extremism. We are at war with people who use their religion for purposes of power and oppression. And yes, we are at war with those people, but I don't want us to be painting with too broad a brush.
Of course, what Marco Rubio said was at war with radical Islam, not Islam or Muslims. That was too broad a brush for her. Rubio came right back at her the next morning with George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week, responding to her unwillingness to use that term radical Islam at the Democratic debate.
I don't understand it. That would be like saying we weren't at war with Nazis because we were afraid to offend some Germans who may have been members of the Nazi party but weren't violent themselves. We are at war with radical Islam, with an interpretation of Islam by a significant number of people around the world who they believe now justifies them in killing those who don't agree with their ideology. This is a clash of civilizations.
Never mind radical Islam. Marco Rubio ready to escalate to clash of civilizations in a hurry there. Democrats... No, thank you. Aaron in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks for calling, Aaron. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Well, I agree with Hillary Clinton that America can't be exclusive in dealing with the issue. But what I do want to say in defense of all the candidates or anybody in politics who may speak out against a problem, it's hard to speak against such barbaric acts without sounding barbaric. And that's what they're trying not to do. Because when you think about what is the problem? What can we do for you? What's wrong? The only thing they're saying is that we want you to believe like us.
Do you look at Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State, and say she bears responsibility for the messes around the world, as Martin O'Malley says, Aaron?
I disagree with that. I believe that somebody needs to be saying to these billion Muslims that say they are not a part of this, that where is their responsibility in handling that problem? They're being used to hide behind by this radical part of their religious belief, but they're not willing to do anything about it. We shouldn't be fighting them. The rest of the Muslim world should be fighting them.
Aaron, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Molly Ball, how do you think the Secretary of State tenure is going to ride throughout the rest of the Democrats' battle, the three of them, and once it gets into the general election?
I think it continues to be Hillary's biggest weakness, and that's what we saw in this debate, is that she just doesn't have good answers for a lot of the questions, the accusations. The question, though, I think, is from what standpoint is anybody going to be able to criticize her? We saw her two Democratic challengers not coming from a particularly firm grounding in foreign policy, mm-hmm. and she was able to sort of drown them with blizzards of detail, drop the names of countries and leaders and specific events in ways that Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley just couldn't come close to doing. So that made her look knowledgeable, even if the substance of what she was saying was somewhat lacking. And I think that's sort of been the theme of these Democratic debates. Hillary Clinton has largely won on style points because she is poised, she has command of a huge amount of information, and she always has an answer ready. Now, when you actually scrutinize those answers, they sometimes fall apart. But her ability to sort of win on style points, I think, continues. But then, when she gets into the general election and she's facing the Republicans and she's being criticized for things like refusing to say radical Islam, which is something that George W. Bush also held to, largely because of our relationships with our allies, it's going to be interesting to see how they defend, things like the Iraq War, which is tied Jeb Bush up in knots over and over again.
Yes.
How are they going to be able to criticize her foreign policy record and the Obama foreign policy record without opening a larger box of questions about how we got here?
Jamie in Macon, Georgia. Jamie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. I am a Democratic voter in my 50s. And to be honest, I am very concerned with both future nominees. I think from an immigration standpoint, from an economic standpoint and a safety standpoint, I can't buy either one of them. It's either giving everything away, and I'm a hardworking man with a family, or not having a very firm and solid stance on what should be done. I am very concerned as a voter, and I truly believe my vote is up for grabs, and I'm not necessarily looking at only the Democratic Party.
Jamie, but what about the argument? You just heard Molly raise it, that the Democratic candidate, whoever that is, will no doubt raise that the Republican push in Iraq got us into this terrible terrain with ISIS ultimately.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I think what bothers me the most is we've got all these serious issues going on from an immigration standpoint. I read today where governors are now choosing not to accept refugees. And, you know, like I said, as a Democratic voter and a father, it's very concerning. It's very concerning.
Jamie, I think we've got the main gist of it, and I appreciate your call from Macon. Sam, what do you see here? I mean, on the one hand, the economy has been such a huge issue in this country for years now, and Bernie Sanders very plugged in on that. Inequities that have just widened and widened in the ways in which the economy is not working for a lot of people. That's gained him a lot of attention and support. On the other hand, you start talking about this kind of bloody threat we saw from ISIS in Paris over the weekend, and you can get people really concerned in a hurry about security. How much does this debate tell you the landscape of events is going to be driving public support?
I think part of what we saw in the Democratic debate was you saw the candidates sort of trying to play it both ways, right? In the wake of the Paris attacks, you want to sound like a commander-in-chief. You want to sound like somebody who has strong foreign policy credentials and a clear vision of what of how to go forward. But at the same time, you don't want to alienate sort of your Democratic base by sounding too hawkish. So I think you're right in the sense that the Paris attacks does sort of change the landscape. And I think it also I agree with Molly that the Democratic debate is now sort of it puts Hillary Clinton at a disadvantage in a way that I think was surprising to a lot of people who said, OK, she has foreign policy experience. This is going to make her strong in this debate. But we saw her attacked on both sides, on both Libya, Iraq, and we also saw her sort of on a back foot, sort of taking a more professorial tone about the historical antecedents of how to go forward in the Middle East.
One more call on this front, and I want to turn to Wall Street. That got very hot as well. Catherine in Somerville, Massachusetts. Catherine, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was actually listening, I guess, a minute ago to the point being made about Bernie moving away from the conversation about Paris and the attacks there.
In about three sentences, he expressed his sympathy or his shock and disgust, and then boom, I want to talk about the rigged economy. Does that work? Is that right?
I think that we have to kind of take a step back and look at the reality that, yes, this was a horrible attack in Paris, and it wasn't something that we should ignore, but it was a Democratic, it was a conversation among candidates that was happening. It was a debate to show the American people what the stances were of the candidates on stage. Mm-hmm. And to ask Bernie to go into, or to ask any candidate to go into a complex or broken down response to Paris, while it might have been a great political opportunity to say this is how I would react, it does not actually tell the American public what their stances on the other issues in our country are.
I get the other issues, and they're big, but I just wonder, Catherine, given what we're seeing in Paris, it seems just obvious now that whoever is the next president, they're going to have ISIS issues right in their lap. Is it okay for Bernie to turn away that quickly? We get that he puts a huge, huge importance on the American economy. I think everybody understands that. But can he just put the rest of the stuff in the back seat as if you know, somebody else will deal that, with that, or I'll deal with that later, or that's not going to be my focus?
I don't know that he was necessarily in a position to comment in the way that you know, Secretary Clinton was, mm-hmm. Simply because he's not dealing in the Secretary of State capacity. He's not going to foreign countries right now and dealing with the diplomacy issues there. If you know, any candidate who ends up in the Oval Office is going to have advisors and actually more information than probably we're getting as a public, as a candidate,
sure.
as
yep.
anyone not involved right now. So to ask him for a really thorough response, I think, you know, again, he acknowledged the problem and acknowledged that this had happened.
Yep.
But that wasn't what they were there to talk about.
So, Catherine, I appreciate your call. Rachel Caulfield, does that work for Bernie Sanders to turn away so quickly from the hot issue that's all about a huge challenge on the foreign affairs front? Can he say, that's not my number one, Americans, and please understand me when I shift gears?
Well, I think any debate necessarily is read by the American public in the context of current affairs. What are the issues that are being raised right now? What's top of mind for people? And top of mind for everybody on Saturday was clearly the Paris attacks. And so, you know, this is something that any president is going to have to deal with, certainly, is understanding foreign policy and making wise choices about America's role relative to not just ISIS, but any number of other foreign affairs. And I think, you know, on a broader scale, one of the things that we're seeing in Bernie Sanders is we're seeing he's able to articulate his core messages. He's getting better and better at that. There's a big question, however, I think that still remains, and that is Bernie Sanders never talks about governing. He talks about this revolution. He talks about what's wrong. He talks about what needs to be fixed. The question is how? And I think the how is, in his mind, this is what he said in the debate, even on the economic front, which are, you know, that forms the core of his message. The how seems to be that millions of Americans have to rise up in this completely abstract, unknown citizen action to reform not just government but the entire economic system of the United States. Even if that were to happen, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think it's unlikely, but even if it were to happen, the question is now what, right? I mean, we still have to have a role in international affairs, and other systems have to replace the ones that would presumably be brought down. You know, so while there's an ideological vision that's put forward by his campaign and by the candidate himself, the actual, you know, the actual tactics and underlying dynamics that would then have to be put in place are, I think, largely left unsaid or
undetailed.
Certainly.
A lot of Americans responding pretty strongly and well to that in the polls. When the economy is front and center, if that shifts, I wonder, but we'll see. Ken in Ticonderoga, New York. Ken, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Esteemed guests, two things. Bernie's pivot away. I get it.
From Paris.
That debate was specifically supposed to be about domestic issues. Bang. So acknowledge it and then dive in, because it's obviously a strong point when the country is as upside down as it is. And if you want to know who wins, Bernie wins just by being on stage, because every mainstream media organization in the country is trying to keep him off the stage because he's trying to kill Citizens United. And Citizens United is going to pump $8 billion into the coffers in this political cycle. So he's not going to get a stage. And when he gets on the debate stage, he wins just by being there. And then take a look at the polls afterwards, the online polls, 80 to 90% in every single poll. Yeah, Bernie wins.
I don't know about your poll numbers, Ken. We'll look at those when I come back with Molly Ball, Sam Frizzell, Rachel Caulfield. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about the Democrats debating in the shadow of the Paris attacks over the weekend, Saturday night in Iowa. Clinton, Sanders, O'Malley taking on the horror of Paris and terrorism, the U.S. economy, Wall Street. You can join us this hour. Did you watch? What did you see? Did Bernie Sanders, did Martin O'Malley score points on Hillary Clinton's connections to Wall Street? And what did you hear on gun control, free college, debt-free college, taxes? Is Bernie Sanders hanging in there as a real threat against Hillary? And what do you still want to hear hashed out, really hashed out by the Democrats? Rachel Caulfield is with us from Drake University, where the debate was held. Associate Professor of Political Science there. Sam Frizzell's with us from Time. Molly Ball from The Atlantic. Hillary Clinton, CBS was hosting this, and John Dickerson did a pretty good job. Asked her about Wall Street and cleaning it up. But she said she'd been very aggressive there, looking to rein in Wall Street. She said her proposals were the most comprehensive out there. Senator Sanders, not so persuaded. Was he satisfied, said Dickerson? Sanders said, not good enough, Hillary's response. And then he went on about her donations from all kinds of people.
I have never heard a candidate, never, who has received huge amounts of money from oil, from coal, from Wall Street, from the military-industrial complex. Not one candidate said, oh, these campaign contributions will not influence me. I'm going to be independent.
Bernie Sanders not buying it, and Martin O'Malley piled on, saying weak tea, her solutions for Wall Street, weak tea.
Secretary Clinton, when you put out your proposal on Wall Street, it was greeted by many as, quote, unquote, weak tea. It is weak tea. It is not what the people expect of our country. We expect that our president will protect the Main Street economy from excesses on Wall Street.
And then, and I'll go to our panel and your calls, but here was Hillary Clinton with a kind of labored explanation of the big contributions that she's had from Wall Street, tying them back to her time as U.S. Senator representing the state of New York and, of course, New York City and literally Wall Street after the attacks of 9/11.
I have hundreds of thousands of donors, most of them small, and I'm very proud that for the first time, a majority of my donors are women, 60%. I represented New York, and I represented New York on 9/11. When we were attacked, where were we attacked? We were attacked in downtown Manhattan, where Wall Street is. I did spend a whole lot of time and effort helping them rebuild. That was good for New York. It was good for the economy. And it was a way to rebuke the terrorists who had attacked our country.
Rachel Caulfield, what about that? Did that work as an explanation for her Wall Street contributors rebuilding Lower Manhattan?
Well, this is going to be, I think, an ongoing issue for Hillary Clinton, particularly given that Bernie Sanders is in the race. You know, I think any of us who pay attention to politics, we know what she was trying to say.
I'm not sure I do. What do you think she was trying to say?
Okay. Well, I think what she was trying to express is that as senator from New York, there was an attack on 9/11. And as a result, she quite necessarily, I think, formed relationships with the institutions that were most affected on 9/11, including Wall Street. And so those relationships have continued in her, in the subsequent years. It was not well expressed. It was not well expressed.
Sam, are you buying that explanation?
I think that this is one of those moments that'll probably come back to haunt her, assuming that she wins the nomination and goes into the general election. I think that the sort of assertiveness with which she said that belied kind of the foolishness of the comment. I found it really baffling, the connection to 9/11. I think this is going to be – and it was a weak point in the debate too. And right after you saw Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders pile on about Glass-Steagall, which is actually – it's a very obscure kind of Depression-era law that was repealed in 1999 that separated investment banks from commercial banks. The idea is that you basically you protect sort of your average person's savings accounts. And they are both in favor of reinstating Glass-Steagall, as is Elizabeth Warren and many prominent Democrats.
It was American policy for decades and decades and decades until the Clinton administration.
Right. That's exactly right. And Hillary Clinton is not in favor of reinstating it. So you saw this obscure policy point become a huge point of contention between the candidates about who is tougher on Wall Street. And frankly, Hillary Clinton was on the defensive in that exchange. And I think so it hurt her both in the Democratic. It may hurt her in the Democratic nomination process as well as in a general election, that 9/11 comment, which the Republicans were quick to pounce on during the debate, actually.
She got called,
I agree that this
Molly.
This is something that could definitely come back to haunt her.
Though plenty of Republicans will have Wall Street donors as well, but I mean, even for regular voters, Nancy Cordes, who was also moderating there for CBS, read a tweet from a listener on Twitter that pushed back very directly against Hillary Clinton's explanation of those Wall Street donations.
I've never seen a candidate invoke 9/11 to justify millions of Wall Street donations until now. The idea being that, yes, you were a champion of the community after 9/11, but what does that have to do with taking big donations?
Well, I'm sorry that whoever tweeted that had that impression, because I worked closely with New Yorkers after 9/11 to rebuild. And so, yes, I've had a lot of folks who give me donations from all kinds of backgrounds say, I don't agree with you on everything, but I like how you stand up. I'm going to support you. And I think that is absolutely appropriate.
Molly, I mean, Twitter is there all the time now. Regular people can be right in the middle of these presidential debates and calling out, in this case, the candidate Clinton.
Yeah, and it was great that she got called on that answer, because it really was an astonishing answer. It was sort of an astonishingly cynical attempt to wield 9/11 to sort of defend herself from an attack. What Hillary would say if she was telling the truth, which she can't say on that stage, is that she gets a lot of donations from Wall Street because she has represented their interests, and she was literally their senator, not necessarily in the sense of them having her in their collective pocket, but in the sense that she was the senator from New York and it was a part of her job. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that the other candidates could not come up with specific instances of policies that Hillary Clinton has championed on behalf of Wall Street. It was much more this sort of the thing about campaign finance and then about Glass-Steagall going forward. I've looked at Hillary's
Glass-Steagall's a pretty big deal, and O'Malley called her entire reform vision weak tea.
I've looked at her reform plan pretty closely, and it actually is pretty tough. And as she said, it goes beyond Glass-Steagall. It goes to what she called the shadow banking system. I think what Hillary didn't anticipate in putting out this plan, which was praised by many liberal economists for its toughness, was that it would be seen as something of an evasion, that in seeking to go beyond the mere regulation of Wall Street and broaden what she's trying to do, that would actually be seen by a lot of people as trying to avoid the issue of just focusing on Wall Street, reinstating Glass-Steagall, breaking up the big banks, which Bernie Sanders wants to do and Hillary Clinton does not. And there was another moment in there that sort of passed pretty fleetingly, but where she was defending the bailouts. And those are overwhelmingly unpopular, I think, with both Democrats and Republicans when you go back to the 2008 financial crisis. So I agree with Sam that there were a lot of negative aspects of that answer for Hillary Clinton, and I think it's something that she's going to be dogged by.
Another point on the economy, minimum wage. Bernie Sanders, very strong for a $15 an hour minimum wage, emphasizing here in this tape his central message there, leveling the playing field for the middle class with that, among other things, that minimum wage. I hear Sanders.
It is not a radical idea to say that if somebody works 40 hours a week, that person should not be living in poverty. It is not a radical idea to say that a single mom should be earning enough money to take care of her kids. So I believe that over the next few years, not tomorrow, but over the next few years, we have got to move the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour, and I apologize to nobody for that.
You said there are consequences.
Apologizes to no one. Hillary Clinton saying, yes, how about a minimum wage hike, but not 15, maybe 12.
I support a $12 national federal minimum wage. That is what the Democrats in the Senate have put forward as a proposal. But I do believe that is a minimum. And places like Seattle, like Los Angeles, like New York City,
sure,
they can go higher.
And then this moment when debate co-moderator there, Nancy Cordes, with John Dickerson of CBS, asked Bernie Sanders exactly how much he intended to raise taxes on top earners in America. He says he's ready to do that. How much, he said.
Let's get specific. How high would you go? You've said before you'd go above 50%. How high?
We haven't come up with an exact number yet, but it will not be as high as the number under Dwight D. Eisenhower, which was 90%. But it will be. I'm not that much of a socialist compared to Eisenhower.
Richard Caulfield, how about the historical reference there? Americans may just be agog. Yes, the top tax rate was under Republican President Eisenhower, 90%, right around there. Bernie Sanders saying, I won't go that high. Does that give him the cover he needs with Democrats? What about general election? Is he going to have to put a number out there?
He's going to have to, if he's going to continue in the race at some point, I think he's going to have to offer some more policy specifics. And this is one area where he's been reluctant to do so. But again, in my mind, it gets back to the fact that, there's a lot of great abstract critique of the existing system that's represented by the Bernie Sanders campaign. We see less about really specific policy proposals and how the governing would occur.
Let's go to Sean in Norman, Oklahoma. Sean, thank you for calling. You're on.
Yeah, I just want to go back to Bernie Sanders, when he opened with his speech, going to the economy. And I think that was super appropriate because, with Citizens United and us being dragged into politicians that we really don't vote for because we just don't have that kind of money to compete with super PACs,
mm-hmm.
we end up getting dragged into, decisions that's not popular with the American people were kind of shut out. I think that's, that overall, problem.
So keep your eye on the economy, Bernie, and that's all right with you, Sean.
Keep your eye on the economy, keep your eye on Citizens United, because I think, if we get rid of that and the politicians know they have to be held accountable to the people, then they're less likely to, vote for like the war on Iraq and things that drag us into these situations of conflict.
Sean, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. One more right here. Dave in Natick, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd have to say, not to beat a dead horse, but her response about 9/11 and connecting that to why Wall Street's helping her was appalling. I couldn't believe it when I heard it, and I was glad she was called out on it on Twitter. But I got to tell you, I got a brother who lives in southern Missouri, in Branson, and he called me up and says, who am I going to vote for? And this was prior to the debate.
Okay.
I said, well, who are you going to vote for? And he couldn't remember. He was hedging on, believe it or not, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And I said, what about Bernie Sanders? He said, who's that? He didn't even know who Bernie Sanders was. My brother in Branson, Missouri. I almost fell over. And of course I gave him some advice, Google, look, this and
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But this goes back to your caller who says the media gives Bernie absolutely no coverage at all. And just one more thing. The Republicans always say it's about the economy, stupid. It's about the economy, stupid. All the pundits, they're always harking back to the economy, the pundits, mind you, because they're always saying, forget the social issues. It's all about the economy. That's what voters are for. And that's what Bernie's been talking about, the economy.
Well, Bill Clinton had no small amount of joy riding the economy. That is the economy stupid mantra as well, and did pretty well with it. But, of course, he was going for the center. Bernie's saying we've got to go in a little different direction here. Dave, I appreciate your call. I want to have a little bit of this exchange. Bernie Sanders wants free college. But we have the two other candidates up there. Martin O'Malley first saying, what about debt-free college?
My dad went to college on a GI Bill after coming home from Japan, flying 33 missions. My daughters went to college on a mountain of bills. And we were proud of them on graduation day, but we're going to be proud every month for the rest of our natural lives. It doesn't need to be that way. We can have debt-free college in the United States.
Free college, the Sanders move. Hillary Clinton said no. Why pay for Trump's kids?
I disagree with free college for everybody. I don't think taxpayers should be paying to send Donald Trump's kids to college.
Sam Frizzell, on the economic front, is Bernie, is he... What is the tail wagging the dog? Is he the main event now, or is Hillary still closer to the mainstream of her party?
I just wanted to go back quickly to what your callers pointed out, which was that they were not bothered by his pivot in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is Bernie Sanders' fundamental appeal, right? He is a candidate with a message. He's going to deliver his message no matter what the format, no matter what the situation, his message about economics. And there was a great moment yesterday after the debate. He was campaigning in a town south of Des Moines. And somebody came up to him and wanted him to sign his forearm. And the idea that the person who wanted to sign him to sign his forearm was going to get a tattoo of Bernie Sanders' signature over his forearm. And this was this great moment where you had this incredible Bernie fan who wanted attention from his candidate. But Bernie Sanders, the anti-candidate, the candidate who is always on message, didn't have time. And he rushed out of the room. And I think that is, to me, a parallel of what happened in the first 90 seconds in the debate, which is a point that your callers did not find a turnoff. People don't mind when he stays on message, even if they're seeking tattoos of his signature on their forearm.
Passion for it right there. Quick call. We're almost out of time. Allison, Stamford, Connecticut. Quickly, Allison.
Hey, Tom. My point was that I personally don't think Bernie Sanders is considering himself a candidate for this election, but his goal, rather, is to drum up the troops, if you will, and drum up the youth for this revolution that he's talking about. He's a smart guy, and he knows that revolution takes a really long time. And what he's doing is stirring the pot for the future. So the young people of our time in 10 years, 20 years from now, are going to be ready to make that change happen.
Allison, I appreciate your call. Molly Ball, Bernie Sanders in it to win it this time?
Well, he can't say he's not, but I do think the caller makes a good point, which is, with all of these issues we've been talking about, whether it's minimum wage, whether it's college debt, Bernie Sanders has pushed Hillary Clinton to the left. He has succeeded in moving the window of acceptable discourse in the Democratic Party to a point where you can say the word socialism and it's not an insult, mm-hmm. to the point where you can talk about debt-free college and breaking up the banks, and those aren't scary ideas. So even in coming halfway to his positions, Hillary Clinton, I think, has gone a lot farther left than she might have originally been planning to. And to Bernie's supporters, when and if he does not get all the way to the nomination, that's got to be very satisfying.
They don't have as many debates as the Republicans. They don't have as many candidates, but there they were Saturday night. Molly Ball at The Atlantic, Sam Frizzell at Time, Rachel Caulfield at Drake University. Thanks to all three of you for helping us look. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll